Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, as you've been hearing on the news, the June jobs report was released at 8:30 this morning, and it shows the country gained just 80,000 jobs last month. That's less than the 90,000 that most economists expected. It's a little better than last month, but still not enough to even keep up with population growth, which would be 150,000 jobs in a month or more. So 4 months before the election, the American employment picture remains mostly stagnant. The unemployment rate remains steady at 8.2% overall, but it jumped nearly a full percentage point for Black Americans to 14.4. Let's take a deeper look at the new numbers with Quincy Crosby, chief market strategist for Prudential Annuities and a former U.S. representative to the International Monetary Fund, as well as a former assistant secretary of commerce. Ms. Crosby, thanks very much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much for inviting us.
What do you make of the numbers? What's revealing here?
Well, the numbers are anemic, and it's just demonstrates how difficult it has been for the economy to climb out of the latest soft patch. You know, we had been adding jobs beginning of the year. The economic data were stronger, and then we started to soften, and we're looking for signs that it's in fact just a soft patch. We're looking for signs that we're gaining more traction, and these numbers suggest that the soft patch remains intact. We'll tell you, though, there were some good parts to the numbers, which were helpful in terms of hours worked, a little bit longer, which is important, and average hourly wages did move up, which is also important for the U.S. consumer.
So that aggregate hours worked, as the stat went up a little bit, meaning people who are employed are having slightly longer work weeks, which is a good thing. And there is a discrepancy between the 84,000 payroll growth number or 80,000 and what they call the household employment survey, which was better, up 128,000 jobs. And people often say the household survey is actually more of an accurate reflection. What's your take on the discrepancy? Those numbers are released simultaneously, but they are different.
They're very different. The household survey is a broad survey. It typically involves people who have just started something new, maybe small businesses. They're not yet counted in the more official payroll discussion. But there is a rule of thumb, and that rule of thumb is, and by the way, you're quite right, household survey typically leads the official number. So if you get a strong household survey, it's telling you that at the very core of the economy, beyond the official numbers, that there's strength. However, typically you want to see that number above 300,000, closing in on 400,000, before you feel that it's going to translate into stronger numbers in the general economy. So the numbers that you just offered, which is below 150,000 jobs in the household survey, is still not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yes, though still 50% more than the payroll report. Another discrepancy, the forecast for this report from ADP, the payroll services company, was more optimistic. So do they measure something different that could either be more accurate or less accurate of a reflection of real economic conditions?
Well, you know, that report over the years has actually gotten a bit more in line with the actual numbers that come out by the government. Years ago, when it first came out, there was even a wider discrepancy, and the correlation, while not 90% positive, has moved up. But one of the things from that number, and why I think the market today had expected a stronger number, was obviously their number was stronger. And the other thing about that number, though, excuse me, they look at the private sector, solely the private sector, is that most of the jobs created under their scenario came from not very large companies, but from small and mid-sized companies. And that was interesting. It's telling us that the large companies are very cautious right now. And even though they've got cash on their balance sheets, they're holding off. By the way, too, we always look at revisions. So it may ultimately fit with the ADP report, because perhaps down the road we will see the revisions revised up rather mm-hmm. than down.
And this report did revise last month's job growth to be a little better than had been reported, right?
Exactly. A tad better, yeah.
My guest, Quincy Crosby from Prudential, Chief Market Strategist for Prudential Annuities, to be specific, as we look at the new monthly jobs report out, and we'll get into some of the policy and political implications of it. We can take a few phone calls, listeners, if you want to react or ask a question about this, 212-433-WNYC, as always, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. I want to mention this racial disparity. It's not in the headlines of most of the financial news organizations, but this really jumped out at me. The unemployment rate for African Americans jumped by almost a full point, from about 13.5 to 14.4%. It had been up 0.6% last month. So while unemployment is stagnant for whites and other Americans, I guess, on average, something serious is happening in Black American employment, up 1.5 percentage points in just 2 months.
Yep, there's no doubt. The data suggests that segment, that demographic group, is falling behind, and falling behind faster.
And is that the lag in the shrinkage, really, I think we should say? It's not just a lack of growth, it's shrinkage in public sector employment. So Blacks are overrepresented in jobs like teachers and bus drivers and things like that. And so they're getting socked while everybody else is at least staying stagnant.
Well, you know, especially in cities, we're seeing across the United States, the large cities are having to slash budgets, and if the Black segment is predominant in the large cities, they are going to find that they're losing their jobs.
How much does Europe have to do with the stagnation this month? Tourism or exports or anything mm-hmm. else in this country that could be getting hit by the euro crisis?
Yes, you know, it affects us in many, many ways. One way, of course, is, you know, specifically global companies with a global footprint, companies that sell overseas. So you're hearing from the likes of FedEx. You're hearing from Nike talking about China, for example. One company after us telling us there is weakness. Now, those companies have very strong balance sheets. You could argue that they can wait this out. But one thing we are seeing is they're being very careful. They don't want to add more people. They don't want to go out and buy more goods and services. They are basically holding on to their cash. So that affects us one way. The second way it affects us is it provides a sort of an envelope or vacuum of uncertainty on our markets. There is one thing about the markets, and having worked in this industry for so long, markets can deal with bad news and move on, but it's very hard to deal with uncertainty. And so when you're enveloped by this uncertainty from what's going on in Europe, you're going to basically just hang in there. You're not going to make any big moves in terms of hiring, and again in terms of buying goods and services. So that's another way. And then on a very, very basic way, you mentioned tourism. We were looking at people were looking at the numbers for Tiffany's, for example, and trying to determine the Tiffany's store in New York City, which is one of their biggest stores in the world. Over the last few years, when we break down the numbers on Tiffany, you'll look at how much of that bottom line, the profits, the revenues came in from visitors from Europe? How many came in from China? And you will see it has a very strong impact on those big brands and those big stores. So the question is, as the European situation deteriorates, as the euro weakens vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar, which is what's happening now, are we going to see as many visitors to the U.S., and are they going to be spending, how much money are they going to be spending? Similarly with the Chinese. So it affects us overall, but more important, I think it just, again, it just keeps our companies, wedded to a wait and see. A wait and see feeds into what we call, in economic terms, a negative feedback loop. In other words, it starts to erode confidence, and people do not spend money.
So this, I think, brings us right to the policy argument that President Obama and the Republicans are having. It's over stimulus to save state and local government jobs, primarily teachers, firefighters, police officers, the president would say, which happened to be the probably the root of the astronomical black unemployment rate. But the president goes way beyond that. And his reason, his side's economic argument, is that government is contributing to a deflationary spiral by doing too little. The more middle-class public sector workers laid off in the name of austerity, the more downward pressure on housing prices and retail sales, then the more private sector workers are laid off, and the worse the investment climate in a vicious cycle or circle. The other side says it's more effective to fuel growth with tax cuts and let those cops and firefighters and teachers go. Does either one enter your investment decisions as chief market strategist at Prudential Annuities?
Well, certainly it does. If you look at this I use the term agnostic way. We don't get political, but the fact is, in the United States, we're a $15 trillion plus economy. 71% of that comes from consumer spending, and when we break that down, the top 20% of earners in America, the top 20%, are responsible for about 40 to 42% of all spending. And when we do look at this, we want to see what are the factors, what are the catalysts for keeping consumers holding on to their cash or going out and spending. And we can see already, the term fiscal cliff, it's so embedded in our psyche now that everyone is using it. But
that's about all these tax changes that would come about at the end of the year.
Exactly. But what we are witnessing is we're hearing in the survey groups that go around and look at all the different demographics that people are worried that there will be no resolution. If there's no resolution, the question is, can our economy handle the cuts that are in the offing? Remember that the Bush tax cuts were extended by the Democrats. Why? Because they needed to keep that income group spending. And so expectations now are, well, gee, that money can now be taken away from me. I should probably be holding back. Also, the Democrats and the president has said over and over again, give me an infrastructure package. Give me a plan to go out and rebuild the roads, rebuild the highways, and that will help create jobs. Initially, early on in the crisis, when we were going into recession, the Republicans actually, felt that was a good strategy. However, as the deficit talks have deteriorated and become, matched with the S&P bringing down the U.S. Credit rating, the Republicans are saying, no, now is not the time to talk about an infrastructure package. So the two sides are now wider apart, and the notion of the fiscal cliff gets closer and closer without a resolution in sight. And what does that do? It just keeps people from spending more money and holding on to what they have.
And the president, we are now told, is going to make some kind of statement this morning. I presume that will be on these jobs numbers. And I guess he'll say some version of the do-nothing Congress is stopping me from stimulating the economy and getting things going again. And, that's people will react to that one way or another. By the way, in terms of politics and the presidential campaign, here's a clip that's been going around on the web of Mitt Romney from 2006, when he was asked about the slow recovery in his state at that time when he was governor of Massachusetts.
You guys are bright enough to look at the numbers. I came in and the jobs had been just falling right off a cliff. And I came in and they kept falling for 11 months. And then we turned around and we're coming back. And that's progress. And if you're going to suggest to me that somehow the day I got elected, somehow jobs should immediately turn around, well, that would be silly. It takes a while to get things turned around.
So that's pretty funny, really. He was a little off mic there, but I think you were all able to hear it saying basically, if you expected jobs to just turn right around the day I was elected, that's unrealistic. It takes time. So if we didn't know who spoke that words and we put a little, you know, speech bubble on top of a cartoon of Barack Obama, here we are today. I don't know how much that actually neutralizes in terms of politics, but it's certainly what chief executives, including both of the current ones running for president, say, huh?
Well, absolutely. I mean, and you see that they're digging into the primary campaigns on both sides to see how their fellow Republicans or fellow Democrats try to dismiss every position they had during the primaries. But the fact of the matter is that the Americans are going to be offered, I think, a very stark contrast with the two parties. You mentioned it. One is going to be tax cuts to help bring revenue back, to bring growth back, versus tax hikes in order to close the gaps. And I think it should be a fairly clear choice for the country. But, you know,
is it too clear for you as somebody who works in the investment sector, who's been in government, who can see the nuances of this? Could one be partly right and the other be partly right? Because it's so stark that they're each accusing the other of really trashing the economy with their policies, either too much austerity or too little.
Yeah, you know, you definitely have it. But when you look at who picks the president ultimately in the last number of election, it's the independent, right? It's the independent voter choosing, and obviously there in certain states the independent voter is even more important. But for the independent voter, that voter has made a decision to stay away from the Democrats, to stay away from the Republicans, telling us that economics, job security, economic policy is the most important thing, because otherwise they would have had identified with one party or another. And therefore, I think by the time we get to the election, what's going to be very important is we say the trajectory. In other words, voters don't have to be at that level where, okay, the unemployment rate is already 5% and that's all right. What they want to see is that progress is being made.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to have an effect. And oddly enough, you could see the president's approval ratings marching higher and lower along with the stock market. When the stock market started to pull back up, in a more sustainable path, the president's approval ratings began to move higher. And so that's also going to be important, is where does this stock market stand by the after Labor Day? Similarly, what are we paying for gasoline after Labor Day? These actually are barometers, glaring barometers or referendums on how we feel about the economy.
Right. One more thing before you go. As I'm watching Twitter on this, besides Obama and Romney, there's one other name that's getting mentioned a lot right now. What do you think it is?
Ron Paul.
No, I'm sure I could find that. But Ben Bernanke, because Fed chairman seemed to suggest this week that even if the political sector is stuck in gridlock, there is more that he could do to stimulate the economy. Are you waiting for the Fed?
Everyone is waiting for the Fed. But the fact of the matter is, and that's why you're going to hear this if you follow, the financial press today and over the weekend, was this number weak enough to bring in the Fed? Ben Bernanke himself has said that quantitative easing, which is going out and buying bonds, printing money to buy bonds, that the power that it has in the marketplace, the power it has in our psyche, really has an in effect when there are liquidity issues. March of 2009, when remember when markets were frozen, and he said, you know, it loses its potency if it's just used every so often because the economy is slipping, and that is a bigger worry. That sure, traders would love to see quantitative easing coming in. It would put a risk on trade. It would be, you know, people would make money. But in terms of solving the problems in the economy, yes, it brings down rates. But what we are seeing is the economy needs something more structural, confidence. It needs more confidence. That doesn't cost any money in order to get people to buy houses. That's structural. And that has not changed. You know, we're growing an economy that half of our economy is just simply not working, and that's the private residential real estate part of the economy. Normally, that was the first part of the economy to bring us out of a recession. Thank goodness we've had manufacturing, we've had automobile sales doing very, very well, but we do not have 100% of the economy functioning. And until that happens, this is going to be what John Maynard Keynes called the colossal muddle through.
As we muddle through in our economic life and toward the election, we thank Quincy Crosby, Chief Market Strategist for Prudential Annuities and a former Assistant Commerce Secretary and U.S. Representative to the International Monetary Fund. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
And on our blog, folks, we just posted some of the numbers that we've been talking about and some of the key elements of this job report that we're trying to make sense of. We've also got a link to the jobs report itself if you want to read it for yourself. So you can see those things. You can see a Twitter widget where we've compiled reaction from some of our favorite economics reporters on the website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And when we continue in a minute, we will look at a company town in our area that has lost its company, Roche, the pharmaceutical company. Why are they leaving Nutley, New Jersey? Stay with us.